Erevin Daf Yigimel. We are on the very bottom of Yud Beis Amud Beis, starting at the two Daf Mishum Rav Yishmael, last line on the Amud. We're coming off a Mishnah on Yud Alf Amud Beis. The Mishnah taught us about the basic halacha regarding the adjustment of a mavui. Hechsher mavui, when you have a mavui and it needs an adjustment in order to be carried within the mavui, a topic that's been discussed since the beginning of the Masechta. So what exactly is a tikkun? What exactly is the adjustment? We have a machlokes Beit Shammai Beis Hillel and Shitas Rebbe Eliezer in the Mishnah. Beit Shammai says you need lechi v'kori, you need both a vertical pole and a horizontal beam going across the entrance. Beis Hillel is of the opinion either or, a lechi or a korah. And Rebbe Eliezer of the opinion that you need lechayam, you need two lechis. Then the Mishnah reported the statement made by a Talmud. Now, in a moment, we're going to identify who the Talmud is, but we're going to leave him anonymous as he was left in the Mishnah. In the name of Rabbi Yishmael, this Talmud is quoted as saying, and he said it in front of Rabbi Akiva, that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel are only arguing on an entrance of a Mavui that is somewhere within the range of 4 Amos to 10 Amos. But if the Mavui is less than 4 Amos, so then they're both in agreement that a correction, that an adjustment of the Mavui only need be done with either a Lechi or a Korah. When Rabbi Akiva hears this report that's given to him by this anonymous student, so Rabbi Akiva says, nope, incorrect. Al-Zev, al-Zanechuku, they argue in both cases, meaning Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel are arguing irrespective of how wide the Mavui is. As long as it's a Pesach, as long as it's an entrance, anywhere from 0 to 10 Amos. So Beit Shammai says that you need Lechi Vikora, and Beit Hillel is of the opinion that you only need either a Lechi or a Korah. Picking it up right here at this point in time, we are going to be covering now the last part of the Mishnah and this quote by the anonymous Talmud. In just a moment, we're going to identify who the anonymous Talmud is, but the Gemara is going to ask a question which it classically does, and that is that if you look carefully at the opinion of Rabbi Akiva quoted at the very end of the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva is really reiterating what is said by the Tanakhama. Tanakhama is obviously of the opinion that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel are arguing regardless of whatever the width of the entrance of the Mavui is, and Rabbi Akiva is just reinforcing that understanding, and that seems to be a redundancy. Rabbi Akiva Hainu Tanakama, now we are on the very top of Yigim Amad Aleph. So Rabbi Akiva and the Tanakama are saying one and the same point. So Ikabinahu de Rab Achalai Vitema Rab Yechiel Velo Misaime. So the Gemara says that yes, there is going to be a discrepancy between the Tanakama and Rabbi Akiva. It's going to be a subtle discrepancy going back to a halacha that was said by Rav Achilai. We said this over in yesterday's daf on Yud Beis Amad Aleph. And the halacha of Rav Achilai is that if you have an entrance of a mavui that is so narrow, it is just 4 tefachim, so then there is no adjustment that's necessary. You don't need a lechi, you don't need neither a lechi nor a korah. Now, we went over this in yesterday's daf, and what the Gemara now is pointing out is that this halacha of Rav Achilai, or some have it as Rav Yechiel, is actually now going to be the distinction, the difference between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Akiva. One agrees with Rav Achilai, and the other disagrees with this position. Which one? The Gemara says, Lo Misaime, we don't know. Generally speaking, when you have a Mishnah with an opinion followed then by a second opinion, the second opinion is coming to add to the first opinion, meaning typically to be Machmir. But as Tosus points out over here, we can't say that in our Mishnah, because if you look at the format of the Mishnah first has the opinion of the Tanakhama, and then you have that entire exchange that the anonymous student is saying in front of Rabbi Akiva, that he quoted B'Shem Rabbi Yishmael, so there's a long break in the Mishnah. So we don't have this idea that the second opinion is coming to add to the first opinion. So says Tosfos, right here, second Tosfos down on the Amud. In the meantime, we continue now in the Gemara. Tanya, we learned in the Brice, Amar Rabbi Akiva, Lo Amar Rabbi Yishmael, Davrzeh, Ela Oso Tamid Amar Davrzeh, V'alachika Oso Tamid. So, in the Braisa, we have a somewhat longer version of Rabbi Akiva's response to the student. And Rabbi Akiva says that Rabbi Yishmael didn't say this. It was just said by the student in of himself. Meaning, let's put this in simpler terms, what Rabbi Akiva's response is that I cannot believe Rabbi Yishmael would ever make such a statement like that, because there simply is no validity to that statement whatsoever. But then Rabbi Akiva goes on and he says something which is confounding, which he says, Halacha goes to Talmud. Oh, by the way, the Halacha falls like that position. And the Gemara immediately picks up on the idea that we find to be an inconsistency in the statement of Rabbi Akiva. Hagufa kasha. Amart lo amar Rabbi Yishmael davar zeh. So first he says Rabbi Yishmael would have never said such a thing. Ama leisil chasakavaseh. The clear implication is that the halacha does not follow this position. V'had amar talacha kosa tamid. And then Rabbi Akiva is quoted as saying, oh, and by the way, the halacha follows this anonymous student. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Rabbi Shmuel, I'm Rabbi Kiva, Ela Lechadi Ba Talmidim. So in explanation, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Rabbi Shmuel says that look, truth of the matter is that as far as Rabbi Kiva is concerned, Rabbi Shmuel never made this statement. There's no support for this statement. There's no limitation to the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, not as the student reports. As far as the praise that he's giving to that student, so he's doing that lechadei b'hatalmidim, literally to sharpen the student. Now, normally the Gemara uses this phrase. The Gemara uses this phrase a number of times throughout Shas. So the general idea behind it is that the Rebbe says something incorrect intentionally, waiting for the Talmud to make sure that he's listening, so he'll pick up on the mistake, and the Talmud will correct him, and the Gemara says, well, how did the Rebbe make the mistake? And the answer is, no, he didn't intentionally, he did all this by intention, meaning on purpose he made the mistake, so that the student is going to correct him, he wanted to make sure that the student was listening. That's lechadid ba'as ha-talmidim. Over here says Tosos, Tosos makes this point over here, third Tosos on the Amud, over here, that's not the Pshat. The Pshat is over here, is that Rebbe Kiva is fully aware of the fact that the student is wrong, that the student is quoting Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Shmuel never said it. And so on one time, he wanted to dismiss the student. On the other hand, he didn't want to totally put him down. He wanted to build him up. So he said immediately afterwards, oh, by the way, I hear your argument. Now, Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Nirin Itmar. Now, in Rav Nachman Yitzchak's version, what Rabbi Kiva said to the student is, I could see your argument. It makes a little more sense in the context of what we're just saying. That he, on one hand, dismissing the conclusion, on the other hand, he doesn't want to totally dismiss the student, so he says, Niren, I hear what you're saying. I'm Rabbi Shimon Levi, Kamakum Shatamosi, Mishum Rabbi Shmuel. I'm Tamid Echel, Lefne Rabbi Kiva. So now, the identity of this Talmud. Rabbi Shimon Levi says, anytime you find this format in the Mishnah, so Eino Ella Rabbi Meir, Shishimish is Rabbi Shmuel, Ves Rabbi Kiva. So we now know that the actual Talmud is none other than Rabbi Meir, who was a student of both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva Ditanya. And the Gemara now is going to be quoting a Braisa, clearly showing us that Rabbi Meir was a student of both. Amar Rabbi Meir kashayisi etzel Rabbi Shmuel haisi matal kan kantum lesoch hadyo. V'lo amar li davar. So Rabbi Meir says that I was learning by Rabbi Shmuel and I put kan kantum into my ink. Rabbi Meir was a sofer. We're going to go over that point. The Gemara in a number of places throughout Shas goes over this point, that Rabbi Meir was a very skilled sofer. And he explains to his Rebbe, Rabbi Shmuel, that he puts an ingredient into his ink in order to make sure that it's permanent ink. It's called kankantum. Rashi, Tosfos both give their descriptions of what it is. For Rashi, it's something black inserted to the ink, according to Tosfos. Some sort of green mineral, perhaps it's copper, according to Tosfos. Anyway, whatever it is, the purpose of this ingredient, this addition, is to make sure that the ink is permanent. Kishabati Yitzel Rabbi Akiva Asra Alai. Now, I took it to Rabbi Akiva, who was my next Rebbe. I showed it to him, and he says that's absolutely prohibited. Now, the Gemara says, now, the whole point of bringing that in was just simply to demonstrate that Rabbi Meir was a Talmud of both. But as long as we got onto this topic of Rabbi Meir and his additive to his ink, so the Gemara is going to stay on this topic for just a little bit longer. The Gemara says, V'amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Meir, Kishayisi, Lo Min Eitzel Rabbi Akiva, Yisimato Kan Kantum L'Sochadio, V'lo Amar Li Dover. In the second version, in the second Braisa, so we're going to be given over the same story, but with a couple of details that are different. Notably, he starts off with his first Rebbe being Rebbe Kiva, and Rebbe Kiva did not have a problem with the Kankantum. Ukshabati as the Rebbe Shmuel, Amrli Bini Ma Malachtecha. And now he moves on to his next Rebbe's Rebbe Shmuel. And the question is posed, what exactly do you do? Amarti lo, and my response is, Lavlar Ani, I am a sofer. Amrli Bini, Rebbe Shmuel's response to me is, my son. Your work is heavenly work. And it's possible that either you're going to add a letter or detract a letter. And you're going to be destroying the entire world. My response back to Rabbi Shmuel is, well, you have nothing to worry about because I have the kankantum that I add to my ink. It's my additive. Now his response is, what do you mean? Do you mean to tell me that you're actually adding that to your ink? The Torah says, by Parshas Sota, the Torah says that you must be able to erase the words that were written on the Parsha. So, limchos. So it must be a writing that you have to be able to erase. Okay, there are a number of points over here that need clarification. And the larger question, which we're going to deal with in just a moment, is that you see the discrepancy between the first Braisa and the second Braisa in terms of who his first Rebbe was, who his second Rebbe was, also a discrepancy between who allowed the kankantum, who prohibited the kankantum, all questions which we're going to get to in just a moment. But in the meantime, in this last brisa, the back and forth between Rav Meir and Rabbi Shmuel was difficult to follow. My kamerle and my kamhadrele. Right? The back and forth is just so difficult. The question, what are you? I'm a sofer. Oh, okay, fine. You know, you got to be careful. Adding a letter, subtracting a letter, that's devastating. And his response is, oh, don't worry. I put my additive into the ink and you got nothing to worry about. The give and take, it doesn't seem like they're having a fluid conversation. So the Gemara goes on to explain. So number one is what Rebbe Meir says to Rebbe Shmuel, is that you have nothing to worry about me missing a letter or adding a letter. I am a baki, I am expert, I have total proficiency in each of the words of the Torah, including which has an extra vav, which does not have an extra vav, etc., etc. Ela afilo mechash lezvuz nami. And look, here I'm going to tell you what I'm also very careful about, and that is a fly landing on wet ink. Dilma asiv yasiv atage dedalis. It could very well be that it's going to be landing on the right hand of the roof of the letter dalet. Umachikle. And what's going to happen now is that because the ink is wet, so the fly now is going to basically remove that little droplet of ink right there. Umashvile resh, turning the dalet into a resh. So davar echad yeshli v'kankanton shmosh animat l'asochad yom. And so I'm telling you now that that's not going to be a problem because the additive I add to the ink is kankantom. The moment that the ink makes contact with the paper, so it's going to be a permanent ink, and there is nothing to worry about. So what Rabbi Meir was responding to Rabbi Shmuel is that, number one, don't worry about chaseres and yeseres because I'm an expert. And number two, even a concern that you didn't bring up, I'm telling you I'm not worried about that as well because of the special ink that I use. Okay, and now we're about ready to ask the basic question, which is the discrepancy between the first brisa and the second brisa. But just before we go on, just one more word, quick word before we go on, and that is Rabbi Shmuel's cautioning Rabbi Meir that you cannot be either adding or deducting a letter because that would be disastrous. What exactly would the disaster be? So you can see Rashi right over here, Machaser Osachas, Rashi writes. Rashi is about 15, 20 lines from the top of the column. Rashi Machaser Osachas ve Hashem Elokim Emes. So pasuk in Sefer Yirmiyahu. So Im techsar alef hare atamachriv. So imagine if you can, right, the on the word emes he left out the aleph, and so then you're making a statement that would be devastating. Hashem Elokim, I don't even want to say it. Or for example, Rashi says vaydaber Hashem im tosif osachas v'tichtov vaydabru nimseis machriv. Or instead of saying vaydaber, so you add a vav after the word vaydaber, meaning making it vaydabru, and they spoke. And that would no longer be a monotheistic religion. So, understandably, so that is the significance of adding or deducting a letter and the devastating consequences. We go back to the Gemara now, and we are going to pick it up at the words Kasha Shimush Hashimush, Kasha Asra Asra. It is the first wide line on the Amud. So, Bishlam Hashimush Hashimush Lo Kasha. Now, who was his Rebbe first? A discrepancy. In the first Brisa, he started by Rebbe Akiva, and then he moved to Reb, sorry, in the first Brisa, he started by Rebbe Shmuel, and then he moved to Rebbe Kiva, and in the second Brisa, just the opposite. So, lo kashim, ikar asa lakamet to Rebbe Kiva. So, the Gemara says, look, as far as explaining who his first Rebbe was, so the discrepancy is based on the following. And that is, first and foremost, he went to Rebbe Kiva to learn Torah by Rebbe Kiva. Umedolom matzi lamekam ali bay. Now, he could not understand what was going on. Rebbe Kiva's thought process was just simply too high a level for Rebbe Meir to totally follow. Also coming to Rebbe Shmuel, so now he goes to Rebbe Shmuel, Begamar Gemara. And then what he does by Rebbe Shmuel is he learns the fundamentals by Rebbe Shmuel. Gamar Gemara, Rashi writes, Mishnah Shekibel Meirabosav. So he learns all the Mishnayos. So now basically what he's doing is he's getting his Bekiyos by Rebbe Shmuel. Vahadar also coming to Rebbe Kiva. Now he goes back to Rebbe Kiva, Besavar Svara. And now by Rebbe Kiva, so now he's able to give analysis. But because, only because, he has the Mishnayos and the Brisos readily in hand, and so now he's got the basic information. He has the Bekiyos, so now he can understand the Iyun. So the Gemara says, so good. So that is what makes Rabbi Meir so successful in learning, and now we understand. Did he start by Rabbi Kiva? Did he start by Rabbi Shmuel? The answer is yes. He started by Rabbi Kiva, but with the inability to understand, so he then went to Rabbi Shmuel, given the Bekiyos, then went back to Rabbi Akiva, So now you understand the discrepancy between the two braises. Ela asra asra kasha kasha. Now, which of these two said that the kankantum was asr? So the discrepancy between the two braises. And here the Gemara says, I don't have an answer, meaning it's just simply a difficulty. Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rabbi Meir Haya Omer Lechol Matilin Kankantum L'Tochad Yo Chutz Miparshat Sota. Okay. So what we have now in the Gemara, as long as we brought up this idea that Parsha Sota has to be erasable, so the Gemara now is going to be quoting a statement in the name of Rabbi Meir, two versions of what Rabbi Meir said. According to Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Rabbi Meir Haya, this is something that Rabbi Meir would say, is that when you are writing your Sefer Torah, you could use permanent ink, right? Ink that you add the kankantum, and with notable exception to Parsha Sota. Parsha Sota must be written in erasable ink. Outside of that, the rest of the Torah can be written with permanent ink. So, as far as Rabbi Shmuel, who we know disagrees with Rabbi Meir, as we already saw in the previous Braisa, so obviously he disagrees. And why is it that he disagrees? And Tosfos suggests that perhaps he has a Gzeira Shava or some other type of limud, or could very well be that the rest of the Torah for Rabbi Shmuel is a Din D'Rabbanan. Whatever the case is, right now we're just focusing on Shitas Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says that as far as the Torah is concerned, it can be written in permanent ink, with notable exception to Parshas Sota. That is, when you get to Parshas Noso, so you must use ink that is erasable. Rabbi Yaakov Amar Mishmo, and Rabbi Yaakov says in the name of Rabbi Meir, Chutz Miparshas Sota Shebe Mikdash, that he agrees that it's Parshas Sota, but not Parshas Sota of the Torah, because that can be used for a Sota, but rather Parshas Sota that you wrote expressly for the purpose of a Sota. Now, my Binah Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu Limchok La Min HaTorah Ika Binayhu. Now, the difference between the two versions of Rabbi Meir is basically, would it be possible to cut out the Parsha of Sota from the Torah and use it for an actual Sota? So, and according to the first version of Rabbi Meir, the answer would be yes. And that's why when you write the Parsha Sota in the Torah, it must be erasable ink, because that could possibly be used for a Sota. And yes, it's a bizarre scenario, meaning we are going to be cutting out the section from the Sefer Torah and using it for the Parsha Sota, and then what are you going to do with the Sefer Torah? Obviously, it's going to need to be replaced. Admittedly, it's strange, but the point is that you can do that. As opposed to the second version, Rav Yaakov's understanding of Rav Meir is that no, you cannot do that. The Parsha Sota that's written in the Sefer Torah was not written Lishma for the purpose of that particular Sota, and therefore cannot be used for that Sota. So, the Gemara says, good, now we understand the difference between the two versions of Rav Meir. Now, Vahani Tanai Kihani Tanai, here's what the Gemara now wants to do. It's going to bring in a braisa with another machlokas, and the Gemara would like to try to align the machlokas that we just saw in the two versions of Rabbi Meir with the upcoming braisa and the two opinions in the upcoming braisa. Let's first start off with the second braisa. Did Tanya learn from the braisa? Ein Megillah Sakshir LaHashkos Basota Acheres. A Megillah Sota cannot be used for another Sota. All right, let's picture the scene. So we have a Sota in the Beis HaMikdash. We are ready now to go through the procedure of the Mei Sota, taking the Parsha, putting it into the water, erasing it in the water, and having her drink that water. And before erasure, so she says that Tamea Ani, she admits that what she did is that she committed an adulterous act with that man in the room. And so now there's no need to erase the words, because the only reason why we're going to go through the whole process is in order to clarify the suffix. We don't need to clarify the suffix anymore. She made an admission. Okay. So now we have a Parsha Sota. So, funny question, but can we recycle it? Can we use it now for another Sota? So according to the Tanakhama, you cannot. You cannot recycle it for another Sota. Rav Achai, by Yoshi, Amar Megillah Sakshir, Lashkos Bas Sota, Acheres. And according to Rav Achai, you can go ahead and recycle it for another Sota. And so what the Gemara now at this point in time is thinking is, we have an alignment. The machlokus over here parallels the previous machlokus, meaning to say that according to the Tanakhama, the Parsha Sota has to be written Lishma, and that's why I cannot use it for another woman. And just like in the previous machlokus between the two versions of Rav Meir, where in version number one, I can't use the Parsha of Sota in the Torah because that wasn't written Lishma. Whereas the second opinion, Rav Yaakov's understanding of Rav Meir is that, I'm sorry, what I just expressed was Rav Yaakov's understanding of Rav Meir. Whereas according to Rav Yehuda's understanding of Rav Meir, I could take it from the Torah. Why? Because there's no requirement of Lishma. So basically, the way the Gemara is now understanding and setting it up is that, is there a requirement of writing the Parsha Sota Lishma? So the machlokas that we had in the previous debate, whether one can cut out the Parsha Sota from the Torah If you subscribe to that, you don't need Lishma. If you say that you must specifically write it for the Sota, there is a requirement of Lishma, similar to what we just saw together in terms of recycling the Parsha Sota. According to the Tanna Kamma, cannot recycle it because it must be written Lishma, as opposed to Rav Acher bar Yoshiah says that you can recycle it, which means that you don't have to write Lishma. All this is a presumed understanding and the perfect alignment between the two. And what the Gemara now is going to do is not necessarily. The Gemara is going to say that the two machloks may have nothing to do with one another. Amra papa dim alohi ad kan lakamar tanakama hasam alakeva and the intake l'shem rachel sula hajam intake l'shem layav agabitar destamim michtevei hachinami demachinan. So one way to differentiate between the two is the following. Look, let's consider. In Braisa number 2, the issue was is that you wrote the Sota for one woman, right? The Gemara describes her as being Rachel, just simply giving attaching a name to her. And now, once you write it for one Sota and attaching a name to that, so now you can't use it for somebody else. But maybe he would agree that if I'm writing it in the Sefer Torah with no one in mind, so maybe then it is flexible. And it could be used for a Sota because I didn't have in mind another specific Sota in mind. So that's one way to differentiate. And Amar of Nachmar Yitzchak, Dil Malohi. And the Gemara now gives us another way to differentiate. Ad kan lo kamer Rabbi Achi bar Yaakov hasam ala di ichtev miyas l'shum Sota ba'olam. So over there, in the case of the writing of the Parsha Sota for a particular woman, at least there you're writing it for the function of a Sota. Of agave Torah dilisamik sive. But when it comes to Torah, where you're not writing it functionally to be used as a Parsha Sota, you're writing it as the Torah, meaning the instruction manual. And so you can't take that and then use it for an actual Sota as well. So hachinam idol machinan. So that can't be erased. So what we now have found is that two different ways to separate the two brises, and the two brises are not necessarily going hand in hand. And so as much as the Gemara wanted to align these two brises, the Gemara gave us two reasons why we should not be aligning these two brises. We are almost done with this tangent of the Sota. We just have a little bit more to go. Now Rav Acher bar Yoshiah says you can recycle the Parsha Sota, meaning that if we wrote it for one woman, Rachel, and we didn't need it for her, can we go ahead now and use it for Leah? Tanna Kamma said no, but Rav Acher says, yes, you can. So the Gemara says, now that's very strange. You are taking a Parsha Sota that was written for one, and now you're going to go use it for another woman. The Gemara says, you know, by get, that is absolutely out of the question. It is the first Mishnah in the third parak of Gittin. Hadidnan, Kasav get Lagar Shesisha, as we now turn to the top of the Amud Beis. Benim lachumatza bo ben iro va'amar shimcha kishmi. V'shem ishtecha kishem ishti, pasul garish bo. So the Mishnah tells us that when it comes to a get, the basic requirement of lishma, when the get is written, it must be written specifically for that man and for that woman who are seeking a divorce. If, however, let's say that after the get is written, the two change their mind, and so what they do is they discard the get, throwing it into the garbage. I'm going to embellish here for just a moment. And now somebody walks by the garbage, picks it up, and sees, oh my goodness gracious, look at this, here's a get that wasn't used. And look at that. It happens to be that that's my name, and look at that. It happens to be my wife's name. And so now he looks at that opportunity, and he says to himself, ah, hashkacha pratis, I found a get that has our names on it. Right? I had a thought about divorcing my wife, rachman al-islan. I don't mean to make light of this. But and now he wants to use it. So the halach is he can't use it. And he can't use it because it wasn't written lishma. So by get, it is a basic requirement into the get that it has to be written lishma, and nobody else can use it. And so the Gemara says, I don't understand. By get, we have this requirement of lishma, making it possible for anyone else to use it. Meanwhile, according to Rav Acha, you could take the Parsha Sota and just recycle it for another woman. I don't get it, says the Gemara. It doesn't make any sense. So the Gemara says, Hachi Asha, the Gemara says, okay, the cases are not comparable. Hasam because of lab iksiv, being iksiv alishma. So when it comes to the get, you got to read the psukim carefully. The Torah says, because of law. The word law over there is a requirement of lishma. And the ksiva has to be lishma. So that means to say, when you write it, it has to be done for the purpose of that woman and that man. Hachava asalaksiv, being an asiya lishma. Asiya dida, mechikahi. But when it comes to the parsha of Sota, the Torah does not say, because of law. The Torah says, v'asa la. The asiya has to be done lishma. Now, by the Parsha Sota, what is the asiya? What's the action point of the Parsha Sota? So, the action point is going to be the mechika. That's the erasing of the Parsha Sota. That's the critical moment. That has to be done lishma. As long as the mechika was not done yet, so now it is it is fungible. You can take it and you can now move it for a and use it for another sota. Okay. Ad kan, that takes us to the end of this somewhat lengthy tangent regarding the parsha of sota. All this because we quoted Rav Meir as putting kankantum into a zinc, and either Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Kiva criticizes him for doing so, based on the fact that now he's running with permanent ink, and you can't write the Torah with permanent ink. Now, Rabbi Meir was of the opinion that the only thing that has to be erasable is just Parsha Sota, two versions of what Rabbi Meir said, but nevertheless, his Rebbeim, either Rabbi Kiva or Rabbi Shmuel, says that no, that the entire Torah has to be erasable, and so therefore they criticize him for doing so. With all that stated, so we are going to be spending the rest of the daf speaking a little bit more about Rabbi Meir. Up until this point in time, we said things about him that were a little bit less than complimentary. The Gemara was not critical about him, just about some of his positions, but now the Gemara is going to be unbelievably complimentary about the Tanner Rabbi Meir. We are on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. We are about five lines down from the top of the Amud. Amar Rabbi Acha Bar Chanina Galov Yadul Nemisha Amar Bahaya Olam Sheim Bedor Shel Rabbi Meir Kemoso. So it is known before HaKadosh Baruch Hu that there is no one in Rabbi Meir's generation as great as Rabbi Meir. Umneima Lo Kavu Halacha Kemoso. And why isn't it that the halacha established like Rabbi Meir? Shelo Yachlu Chaver V'Lamod Asof Da'ato. Because the students never fully understood Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir's thought process was operating on a higher level than that of the students, and so therefore he was difficult to comprehend. Shuhu Amar Al Tamei Tahor, Umar Lo Panim, Al Tahor Tamei, Umar Lo Panim. What Rabbi Meir was able to do, based on his reasoning, his logic, his deduction, is that he was able to show you how something really is Tamei, but he argued that it's Tahor. Or when something was really Tahor, you argue that it was Tamei. And by the time he got done with his reasoning and his logic, so you were convinced by it. So the Gemara says is that because he basically ran rings around everyone else in his time, so it was hard to keep up with him. And so therefore, the halacha does not follow like them. Tana, la Rabbi Meir Shmo, la Rabbi Nar Rai Shmo. In the Braisa, we have it that his name wasn't really Rabbi Meir, but rather was Rabbi Nar Rai. V'lam nikra Shmo Rabbi Meir, and why was he given the name Rabbi Meir? Shu Meir Einei Chachamim Balacha. Because what he did is he enlightened the students in halacha. V'lo Nar Rai Shmo, ela Rabbi Nechemya Shmo. Now, this could either be a continuum, which means to say that Rabbi Meir also went by other names as well, or, as you can see on the side of the Gemara, that this is a totally different statement in terms of who Rabbi Naharai was. V'lo Naharai Shmo, Ela Rabbi Nechemya Shmo. That really his name was Rabbi Nechemya. V'amri la Rabbi Elazar ben Arach Shmo, and some say it was Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, V'lam Nikra Shmo Naharai. Why is it referred to as Rabbi Naharai? Shem Manhir Einei Chachamim Balacha. Because what he did is he clarified, he enlightened the Chachamim in terms of what the halacha is. Amar Rebbe. We have it in our Gemara that the Girsa should be Rebbe. Some have the Girsa that it's Rav. Either way, we know Rav Meir was a late generation Tana. So he was towards the end of the period of the Tanaim, way post Chorban Bayis Sheni. And so that puts him right around the generation, the Tekufa of Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi. So, but it could very well be that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was a Talmud of Rav Meir, but in another Girsa we have Rav. Now, that also is more than reasonable and possible, but Rav we know was a first generation Amora, and we also know that Rav was a nephew of Rabbi Chia, a student of Rabbi Chia. He also learned by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi as well. Anyway, so either way, either it's Rabbi or it's Rav, so learning by Rabbi Meir, Amar Rabbi or Rav, Hai de Mechavrai, de Chazisal Rabbi Meir, Mechavrai. He says, the fact that I'm so sharp is a function of the fact that I attended the Shira Meir and I saw him. And I saw him from the back. Now, had I seen him from the front, I would have been even sharper. My ability to reason and to logic and to deduce would have been even better had I been seated right in front of him and got to see his face. That you have to be able to see your Rav. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Taman Hayel, Rabbi Meir, V'Simcha Shmo. There was a student of Rabbi Meir, his name was Simcha, Shahaya Omer, Akol Dava V'Dava, Shal Tuma, Arba'im, V'Shmona, Ta'amei Tuma. Something that was Tamei, he gave 48 different explanations in terms of why. V'Akol Dava V'Dava, Shal Tahara, Arba'im, V'Shmona, Ta'amei Tahara. As far as something being Tahara is concerned, 48 different ways to explain why it was Tahara. Tana, we learned in another Braisa, Tamad Vasek, Hayab, Yavne. There was a student, a very careful, diligent student, who was in Yavne, Shalyam Ataras Hasharetz, b'meah v'chamishim ta'amim. And he declared the Sheretz to be Tahor based on 150 different reasons. Now, this line of the Gemara over here is really difficult. As we know that the Sheretz, of course, is a Tame. Not only that, the Sheretz is an Avatama. And all he's doing is just simply presenting arguments in terms of how you can reason and strategize and argue why it is that the Sheretz should, in fact, be Tahor, not Tame. Now, of course, it's very difficult because as much as he's impressing others with his powers of deduction reasoning, but when all said and done, the Torah says that's Tameh, and so when all said and done, it's Tameh, and so all this reasoning and logic, so it is, quite frankly, a huge waste of time if that, in fact, is not the halacha. So it is very difficult. In fact, Tosfos over here attempts to deal with this very basic problem of what is the point of doing this, what ends does one accomplish by reasoning the opposite of what we know the conclusion to be. You can see Tosfos over there. Interesting position, Rabbeinu Tam. I'm not going to go through it right now. But anyway, obviously, a notable problem with this Gemara over here. Amar Ravina Ani Adon V'Atarena. Ravina says, I'd like to take a stab at it. I'd like to try to give a svar in terms of how we could see that a Sheretz is, in fact, Tahor. And the argument would go as follows. So we know that when it comes to a snake, which is not going to be an avatoma, the only crawly insects that are going to be an avatoma are only the eight that are mentioned in the Torah. We covered this when we did the Perek of Shemoneh Shvatzim back in Masechta Shabbos. And so, the snake not being one of them, so he says, look, the argument will sound something like this. We know that a snake is able to kill somebody. And so therefore what the snake is able to do is create tuma. And meanwhile, the snake itself is tahor. A sheretz, which is a non-threatening insect, non-threatening bug, whatever the shrutzim are, there are eight of them, and we've gone over it before. We don't exactly know the precise definition of what they are. But anyway, they're all non-threatening. They're not venomous. So they're not maimis. They don't kill. And they don't increase tuma. So for sure, they should be tahor as well. Okay, so kavachomer. Kavachomer tells us that if a snake, which actually generates tuma, it itself is not going to be tameh. The sheretz, which does not generate tuma, for sure should not be tameh. Velohi, but the Gemara says, as much as a kavachomer as this is, it's not such a good kavachomer. Maisa kots be'ama ka'avid. The Gemara describes that when a snake kills somebody, it's maisa kots, meaning, yes, it's true that the snake is killing, but the snake is not ultimately responsible. It'd be no different than a person getting cut on something sharp and cut in a critical area and he died. So you don't say that the sharp item was the one that generated the tuma. In other words, it just simply was an instrument that killed the person, but we don't look at it as a gorin. We don't look at it as a causative. So the kavachomer really doesn't get off the ground, and as much as Ravina tried to make the argument, so the Gemara says it's not even a valid argument. And again, I go back to the question which I raised, which is, what would be the point of all this? Meaning, as much as you could argue, we know the halacha is a sheretz is an avatoma, and so again, this little piece of Gemara over here is very difficult to understand. So Rabbi Abba says in the name of Shmuel that there for 3 years, a machlok between Beishamah and Beiselah, halalu omrim halacha kamaseinu, halalu omrim halacha kamaseinu, each one declaring that the halacha follows like their respective positions. Yatza Baskel ve'amar elev elu divrei elokim chayim hein. The Baskel comes out and says that both of them are reflections of the truth. Both of them are words of a Kadosh Baruch Hu v'halacha kebeiselah. And meanwhile, the halacha follows like Beis Hillel. V'chimi achashe, eilu ve'eilu divrei Elohim chayim, im ne'mazachu Beis Hillel, k'fo halacha k'mosam. If each one of them is reflecting truth, so why does the halacha fall like Beis Hillel? Mimnei she'nochin ve'aluvin hayu. So the Gemara gives an interesting reason why it is that we follow like Shitas Beis Hillel, and that is because they are pleasant, because they are more modest, more quiet. V'yushonim divrei v'divrei Beis Shammai. And what they would do is that every time they would report a machlokas between them and Beis Shammai, so they would make sure to always introduce the Shita Beis Shammai. Not only that, v'lo od, elo shemakdim in divrei Beis Shammai ledivreihem. They always introduce Beis Shammai's position before their own. Kosta Sheshanino, the Gemara says, I'll give you an example. Misha, ya rosha veruba besukkah. Let's say a person sitting in the sukkah, and his head and the majority of his body is in the sukkah, which is great. That's what the halacha demands. V'shulchana besukkah bayis. However, the table is not in the sukkah, it's actually in the house. We've gone over this number of times. When we see Masechta Sukkah, we're gonna make this point a number of times, and that is that generally speaking, their sukkah abutted the house, and so that means to say that it's you could be sitting in the sukkah and the table could be in the house. And Beis Shammai posim and Beis Hillel machshirin. So we have a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says that for such an individual, he's not fulfilled his mitzvah of yeshiva besukkah, since the table is in the house. I'm going to explain why in just a moment. And Beis Hillel says, no, kosher. Now, Amr Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, lo kacha, yamaisa sha'achu, zikne Beis Shammai, zikne Beis Hillel, vakeres, Rav Yochanan ben ha-charanis, umatzal yoshev, rosh v'ruba besukkah, v'shachana besukkah habayis. So Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai, let me remind you of the time that we went to go visit Rav Yochanan, and he was sitting exactly in the way we just described, where the head and the majority of his body is in the sukkah, and his table's in the house. Amr lehem Beis Shammai, and Beis Shammai says to Beis Hillel, Misham Raya, what are you talking about? Efhein Amru, lo. So they said, Imkacha Isanoag, Lokianta Mitzvah Sukkah Miyamecha. What do you mean? If that's the way that you are going about sitting in your sukkah with a table in your house, not in your sukkah, so you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah, Lamdacha Shekol Amash V'Latzmo. Now, what we get over here is the following, before we continue in the Gemara, and that is that we see that Beis Hillel is presenting the machlokas regarding a person who sits in the sukkah, but the table is outside of the sukkah, and they present not only their position, they present Beis Shammai. Furthermore, they present the Beis Shammai's position before their own position, all speaking to the anava, to the humility of Beis Hillel, where they had no problem sharing that this matter is open for debate and dispute, and that Beis Shammai's position is the following, and our position is the following. As far as the halacha is concerned over here in sukkah, I'm just going to speak about it very briefly. It's not really our topic for now, but the idea is that Beis Shammai is of the position that if your table is not in your sukkah, but rather it's in the house, so you're going to be drawn by your table. In other words, you're going to be eating on the table, and even though physically, currently, right now, you're in the sukkah, but the concern is going to be is that you're going to bend over the table to get a closer look at that food, to get more into the meal, and you're going to be moving away from the sukkah, and so as Gzeirah D'Rabbanan, so one should not be situated in this manner, for fear that he's not going to end up being under the sukkah, he's going to be more over the table, which is in the house, not in the sukkah. It's a little bit interesting and difficult, because if you remember the story that we just read, so they said to Beis Shammai, he said to Rav Yochanan ben Charanis, if this is what you did, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah. You have not fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah. That's very difficult to understand. We're talking about Gzeirah D'Rabbanan, and only because of maybe you're going to put your head over the table, out of the sukkah, so therefore you haven't fulfilled your mitzvah of sukkah. Now that's very strong. Meaning one could say that you violated Gzeirah D'Rabbanan, but to say that you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah, if in fact you were situating the sukkah, so that's very difficult. The Ran, in the beginning of Masechta Sukkah, takes up this very issue, discusses it, gives a couple possibilities of what he meant by that. Another, just one other point, I just mentioned it briefly, and that is, this is such an interesting example of all the debates that we could have gone over between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. This is such an interesting example that the Gemara goes over, and that is because in this particular circumstance, the halacha falls like Beis Shammai. There are a number of notable exceptions where the halacha falls like Beis Shammai, not like Beis Hillel, this being one of them. So it's so interesting, in a point of time where the Gemara is highlighting how we normally follow like Beis Hillel because of their modesty and humility, the one example they give is the one time, not one, but one of the select times that we follow like Beis Shammai, not like Beis Hillel. Anyway, coming now, almost finishing up, so lalamdecha, so what do we learn from all this? Shekol ha-mashkol ha-atzma ha-kosh baruch ha-magbiyo, by virtue of the fact that we're watching Beis Hillel, who are acting in a manner of humility, so you could say that in general, when someone lowers themselves, kosh baruch raises them. The opposite is also true. Someone wants to aggrandize himself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lowers them. If somebody chases after greatness, looking for kavod, so what's going to happen is that the greatness, the leadership, is going to run away from them. Anyone running away from greatness, so greatness is going to catch up with him. Someone who pushes the time, meaning to say that tries to rush something from happening, and it's premature, shouldn't happen. So what's going to end up happening is that he's not going to get that particular goal. And anyone who is patient and waits for the right time, so the time will in fact come. Tanu Rabbanan. Finishing up this entire discussion. For 2.5 years, there was another debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Halalu omrim noch lo la'adam shelo nivra, yosem mishenivra. One takes the position that it would have been better for a person not to have been born, rather than having been born and being brought into this world. Halalu omrim noch lo la'adam shenivra, yosem mishelo nivra. And then the other position is that it would have been better that we are born into this world rather than not being born into this world. Nimnu v'gamru, they actually had a vote on this matter, and they concluded, Noch lo la'adam shelo nivra yosem shenivra. Better that we not have been born rather than been born. Asher shenivra, but here we are. So yifashvish v'masav amrila yimashvish v'masav. So what we should do is we should be careful, meaning there's so much temptation out there, so obviously we need to be careful. Rashi describes the discrepancy between yifashvish and yimashvish. Rashi over here writes, by yifashvish, she'asa kvar v'yivdok averu shebiyado v'yizvada v'yashov. So Rashi writing by Yefashvesh, that it's talking about things that you have done in the past, and you should examine them and look back on them, and be a chozer b'tshuva on the things that you did wrong. Yemashmesh b'masav, Rashi says, that's talking about anticipating the things that you are going to do. You have a mitzvah opportunity, so like the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, take an account and figure out the reward you're going to get for doing the mitzvah, as opposed to whatever temporary rewards you're going to get for skipping out on the mitzvah. And the same thing is true by an avera. There is a temporary gain to do an avera. On the other hand, the ramifications vis-a-vis schar va'onish by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so it's going to be tremendous. So obviously you weigh that, and obviously if you think about it, you realize that the onish of doing the avera is going to far outweigh whatever temporary benefits you're going to get for doing the Avera. And so therefore, you would stop from doing the Avera. So, all this is the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Anyway, so, look, it's better had we not been here, but now that we're here, Yefashvish Mamasav, Yemashvish Mamasav. Good. Admittedly, by the way, this Gemara is spoken about at length, a number of different perspectives. It's a very difficult Gemara as well, because this Machlokas that takes place between the two, what is the point of the Machlokas? Meaning that generally speaking, when you have a Machlokas and Halacha, it's a question of, well, should we do this or should we do this? Should we not do this? Should we not do that? Meaning it is a discussion of what is the proper behavior and the conduct. Over here, it sounds like a philosophical debate, right? Better that we're not here, better that we are here. When all said and done, we're here. So what difference does it make? How does that play out practically speaking? And on top of that, what's at the root of the debate? Why is it better that we were not here? Why is it better that we're here? So obviously this is the kind of Gemara that could be discussed at great length, but right now, I'll raise awareness, raise some of the issues. The Marashah would be a good person to turn to over here to at least address the question of what they're debating, but obviously this makes for a much longer discussion. Let us review the daf. We start off this morning, no longer morning, but we start off with the daf, with the discussion of Rabbi Kiva and the Tanakhama of our Mishnah say that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are arguing with no limitations, in other words, the redundancy. So the Gemara says there's a subtle difference between them, and that's a halacha of Rav Hachalai, which is that if the entrance of the Mavui is so narrow that it's only four tvachim, so then it doesn't need a tikkun whatsoever. One position agrees with him, the other one does not. Question of who agrees, who disagrees, we do not know. The Gemara then went into a long discussion identifying who the Talmud is, and the rest of the daf spoke about more about this Talmud. First of all, who is the Talmud? It's Rabbi Meir. Anytime you have a discussion where this anonymous student quotes B'Shem Rabbi Shmuel in front of Rabbi Kiva, we know it's Rabbi Meir because Rabbi Meir had both of them being his Rebbe. The Gemara brought down a number of brises showing us that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva were both the Rebbeim of Rabbi Meir. And we know based on the fact that we have two brises that shared with us that Rabbi Meir showed off his ink, his special ink in which he wrote Sfarim, Sefer Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzos. And he added Kankantum and he added this permanent ink into it. And he was showing it off to his Rebbeim. One of his Rebbeim was fine with it. The other Rebbe was not happy with it. So we dealt with a couple of discrepancies. Some we answered well, some we couldn't answer. One, who was Rabbi Meir's first Rebbe? Was it Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva? So we come to conclude that his first Rebbe was actually Rabbi Kiva, but he didn't really understand Shir. He then went to Rabbi Shmuel, he got the Bekiyas, and then he went back to Rabbi Kiva, and now he understood what was going on. In terms of which of the Rebbeim were fine with the Kankantum, which were not fine with it, So the Gemara says, for that we do not know. Then the Gemara went on to this somewhat lengthy tangent regarding Parsha Sota. Rabbi Meir says that the entire Torah can be written with permanent ink with exception to Parsha Sota. Parsha Sota has to be erasable because the Pasuk says regarding Parsha Sota that you're going to put it in the water, it's going to erase in the water. So we know Parsha Sota is something that has to be erased. Is that Parsha Sota that's written in the Torah, or is that Parsha Sota that you're writing separately, specifically for the Sota? Two versions of Rabbi Meir. The Gemara thinks that this has to do with the halacha of Lishma versus not Lishma. The Gemara wanted to coordinate it with another machlokas, whether or not a person can recycle a Parsha Sota from one woman for another woman. And so the Gemara thought that maybe these two are connected. The Gemara says no, for two different reasons these machloksim are not connected. The Gemara wants to know, how is Parsha Sota any different than a get? A get has to be written Lishma. If you write a get for one couple, it cannot be used for another couple, even if the names are the same, because it's a failure of Lishma. Why don't we say the same thing by the Parsha Sota, at least within the Shita of Rav Achai, who says that one is allowed to recycle the Parsha Sota from one woman to another. So the Gemara says it's different because the Lishma requirement of get is Ksiva Lishma. The requirement of Lishma by a Parsha Sota is Asiya Lishma, and the Asiya comes in the form of the Mechika in terms of the erasing. The Gemara then had a number of complimentary things to say about Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, no one was greater than him in his generation. He went by Rabbi Meir. He also actually had the name of Reb Norai, Rabbi Meir, because he enlightened. The Gemara says that either Rebbe or Rav was a student of Reb Meir and was in attendance in a shir, saw him from the back when he gave shir, and if he saw him from the front, nobody would have been an equal to him. Pasuk says, "Va'yuenecha ra'os es marecha." You got to see a Rebbe. And so being a Talmud of Reb Meir led to tremendous success in learning. The Gemara says that as far as his ability to make svaras, unmatched, nobody can make better svaras than him. The Gemara goes back to the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel abound. The Baal Shem Tov comes out and says that the halacha falls like Beis Hillel, despite the fact that Eilu ve'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. Again, another topic, which is a huge topic, which we spent very little time really discussing, and that is this idea that there are multiple truths. Obviously, that is something that is a major concept in and of itself, how to understand it, various perspectives in terms of how to understand it. I didn't really touch on it. But anyway, the idea is that there is something to the Shita of Beis Shammai. There is something to the Shita of Beis Hillel. Eilu ve'Eilu. Okay, just right now, leave it as it is. And the Gemara says, and yet the Baskel says that we paskin like Beis Hillel. We just saw this Baskel a couple of days ago in the Daf. But here it is, actually, the Brisa telling us about the Baskel. What makes Beis Hillel's position the one that we follow? So the Gemara attributes it to the fact that Beis Hillel were in a state of anava. They were subdued. They were humble. When presenting the machlokes between them and Beis Shammai, they always present their position. They always present Beis Shammai's position and Beis Shammai's position first, only followed then afterwards by their own opinion. The Gemara says one last machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and that was the topic of whether or not it's better that we were created and brought into this world, or better that we were not created. The conclusion is better that we were not created and brought into this world, but now that we're here, either yafashvesh or yamashmesh memasav.